You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, diets, and binging. I meant to say body shame, binging, and diets that don't work, but somehow it didn't quite come out that way. So there you go. Second time's the charm. I am here to help you wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And if you would like to call me today and talk about whatever is going on with you, the number is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It is not about food. It is not about willpower. It is not about control. It is not about any of those things. The real problem is not what you're eating. It's why. It's what's eating at you. So give me a call and let's talk about whatever is going on with you. And I will connect it to whatever's going on with food, or call me and tell me whatever's going on with food, and I'll connect it to whatever is going on with you. Again, 323-203-0815. Okay, so I have a question. I have my long list of questions, and one of them is, you know, why do you not believe in recovery? Why do you not believe in recovery? This is actually a trick question, because I'm sure the person knows the answer. I don't believe in recovery because I don't believe in being in recovery. We recover from a bad breakup. We recover from disappointment. We recover from something like that. Being in recovery sort of suggests you're always going to deal with it. You're always going to have to deal with food, or you're always going to have to think about it, and you're always going to have to count calories, carbs, or fat grams. It's always going to be on your mind. You're always going to be in a battle with yourself and with food. No, I do not believe in recovery, because I believe instead in liberation. And liberation means you don't think about food other than, what am I going to eat for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks? And is it good? It's no longer a torturous relationship that you have with food. That's what liberation is. Liberation is you put all eating disorders in your rearview mirror. You are done. It is behind you. So liberation is what I believe in. Let me just say a little bit more about that. So binging is not the same as, I don't know, recovering from alcohol addiction or drug addiction, or, you know, where your body may have become addicted to the substance of alcohol. Binge eating may feel like that. I mean, many people tell me, hey, sugar is my personal crack, and it sure feels that way. Absolutely. And I remember, by the way, why do I do this work? Because not only do I know how to heal and liberate from binge eating and all eating disorders, but I used to be the poster child for eating disorders. So I have been there. I know what it's like to struggle. I know what it's like to feel addicted to food. I know what that feels like, where you wake up and it's all you can think of. That's why I say on the show, I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. Because I used to wake up and think about, okay, I'm going to be good today. What am I going to eat? What am I going to not eat? It was always there, just ruminating, constantly there, always, always, always. No, this is not a way to live. It feels like an addiction. But it is not. It is a way of coping that just takes over. It is a frenemy. It is a friend in that it does something for you. It helps you cope. It helps you numb. It helps you distract. If you're beating yourself up for what you're eating or what you weigh, maybe you're not upset with someone in your life, or maybe you're not thinking about something else that's going on in your life. Binge eating actually helps you in some way. And when you can figure out what it is doing for you and find new ways of coping, guess what? you stop binge eating. Ultimately, you know, binge eating is it's a self-abandonment. I was just saying this in my Binge Free Babes group on Monday night. I said binge eating is a form of self-abandonment. It is a way of just abandoning yourself instead of being there for yourself. And we learn not to be there for yourself. So again, liberation means freedom, 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 freedom. And when you deal with the why you're binging, and just to make things a little extra complicated, often that why is out of our awareness. We go straight to food so quickly, sometimes we don't even know we're triggered by a situation. We think we're triggered by food. We think we're triggered by chocolate or ice cream or cookies or something with a simple carb. We think we're triggered by food. No, we're triggered by a situation. We also binge out of deprivation. The anticipation of deprivation or the experience of deprivation makes you want something more. If I tell you you can't ever eat, I don't know, let me just think of something like cabbage. You might well go like, ooh, I can never eat cabbage. Gosh, I really want some cabbage. Maybe that's not a great example, but we want what we cannot have. And so part of it is we want the thing that we cannot have so that when we have it, we end up thinking, well, I've blown it. I've ruined my day now. So I might as well have more of it. And then I'm going to never have it again until I reach whatever weight. So we set ourselves up with these food rules that only end up hurting us. But that is really the least of it. We are mostly triggered by situations that often we can't see or don't want to look at. And then, you know, food is scary instead of yummy, and we have this toxic relationship with it, like a love-hate relationship with food. And ideally, you know, when we have a love relationship with ourselves and we learn how to identify what our triggers are and we learn how to express what we're feeling and we learn how to respond to ourselves in a different way, everything with food completely changes. And that is because, you know, binging or whatever unhealthy, unhappy relationship with food that you have is a solution to the problem that feels like the problem, but is not, is a solution to the real problem, which is what is eating at you, a feeling, a wish, a fear, a conflict, something that is going on inside that is uncomfortable, scary, and we go to food to resolve it. And by the way, I should, you know, share my story. I think it's been a while since I've actually shared my story, and I think it would help you to know why I do what I do. Some of you have been longtime listeners and you know this, but it doesn't hurt to hear it again. And some of you are new, and so let me just share why I do what I do and why I know that change is possible. So when I was 5 years old, I randomly decided that I was too big. I thought my legs were too big. I was a normal weight child, but I thought that if I were thinner, I would somehow be better. And this was the start of my preoccupation with my weight and with food. And when I look back at my old journals from when I was a teenager, because what started at 5 and then it just continued, it got worse and worse and worse. And when I look at my old journals from when I was a teenager, every page is filled with numbers. Calories I ate, calories I burned, the weight I was going to be. It totally took over almost every waking thought. And finally, I went to therapy for anxiety. I never told my therapist the truth about what was going on with food. I was too ashamed and embarrassed and horrified by what I was doing, because I considered myself the poster child for eating disorders, but I was always on some crazy restrictive diet, and eventually my willpower would completely fail and I would purge, binge, and then sometimes purge. That's why I was the poster child for eating disorders. I had all of them. I was restricting, I was binging, I was purging. So I went to therapy, and I never told my therapist that I was, in fact, the poster child for eating disorders. We talked about guys and goals and dreams and fears and all kinds of other stuff. And by the time I left treatment, all my destructive eating behaviors were gone. And not once, not a single time had I ever talked about the truth of what was going on with food. So how is this possible? How did I go from being the poster child for eating disorders to completely liberating myself from it? Because remember, I don't believe in recovery. I believe in liberation without ever talking about food. And that was because food was not the problem. What was the problem? The problem was my harsh relationship with myself. I was a perfectionist. Nothing was ever good enough. I was super hard on myself. And, you know, food helped me escape my own mean voice. I also had a hard time being upset with other people. So guess what? I just boomeranged all those feelings back at myself. Instead of being disappointed or upset with a disappointing or upsetting person, I was upset with myself for what I was eating or how much I weighed. But when I changed my relationship with myself, when I stopped being a critic and started being kind, guess what? My relationship with food also completely changed. So eating disorders, food is the solution to the problem. It is not the problem. The problem is our relationship often to ourselves. I have spent 20 years treating people who struggle with eating disorders, all of whom develop eating disorders for reasons that are as unique as they are. But guess what? One thing they all have in common, every single one of them, is they were all hard on themselves, didn't know how to express feelings, and didn't know how to support themselves, reassure themselves, be kind to themselves. So that is why it is so important to really look at why you are turning to food, not what you are eating. All right, so that is my long answer to why I do not believe in recovery and why I believe in liberation. Josh on Instagram is asking, can medication help with eating disorders? No, it can't. Big Pharma does not. You're welcome. The Big Pharma does not want you to know this, because they're constantly coming up with medications that, oh, this is going to help with eating disorders. When Prozac first came out, like whatever, in the 70s, I think it was, oh, this is the answer to, it's going to cure bulimia. It's going to cure eating disorders. No, medications can help with the underlying depression or anxiety. But until you learn to and some people absolutely need medication for to deal with their depression or anxiety, some long-term, some short-term. I'm not disparaging medication. So it can help with that. But ultimately, you cannot medicate your way into changing the way you relate to yourself. That is learned behavior. We learn to treat ourselves in a certain way. That's the good news, because we can also learn a different way. We can unlearn that way and learn a different way. And by the way, what do we learn? We learn that emotions are bad, that there's something wrong with feelings, that we are weak if we have emotions, and we are strong if we don't. If we push them away, we're strong. Yeah, not so much. You know, we get the message that if you're angry, you're an angry person. You're an angry person, and maybe you need to go to anger management classes. If you're sad, which by the way, Anger is a normal feeling. Sadness is a normal feeling. Some people are clinically depressed and need medication, but not everyone who's sad is depressed. But we're told, oh, you're sad? Here's a prescription. Here's a pill. Take a pill for that. Anxious, there is a pill for that too. And if you're scared, be strong, fight, do not give in to fear. So what do we do with our feelings? Well, a lot of us eat. And why? By the way, why do we turn to food? One woman said to me once, she said, "Why is food my thing? Why can't I be addicted to meth? At least I'd be skinny." And the sad part is when she said that, when she was like, "At least I'd be skinny," she was serious. She would rather have been addicted to meth than feel addicted to food. Why do we turn to food? Because our very first experience of feeling connected to somebody, soothed, safe, is when we are infants, and the experience of being held in someone's arms, having our needs met, feeling safe and secure and blissfully connected to somebody else, one of our parents usually, or someone who's there to raise us, to help us, to feed us. The feeling of bliss and safety is connected to the feeling of being fed. So in our psyche, unconsciously, we don't actively think of it, but we unconsciously connect being fed, eating, with safety and connection. And from us in our unconscious minds, that has a lot to do with our behavior. So we turn to food because it works. It soothes us. It comforts us. And it also evokes a sense of being comforted by someone else. When we talk about comfort food, by the way, what are we implicitly talking about? The wish to be comforted by somebody else. So that is why it is so important to look at what is eating at you and not just focus on what you're eating, right? And yes, Josh, again, just mentioned something about what's in our unconscious. And our unconscious is what is out of our awareness, but is fully in operation. We are not aware of certain unconscious things that might be triggering us, but we get triggered and then we may turn to food. We think it's food. We think we're triggered by food. No, something else is going on. Example, this is my favorite example, but I've heard variations of it from a lot of people, was the person who thought she was addicted to Chunky Monkey. And she told me that the night before she had been watching TV and suddenly Ben and Jerry's was calling her name. You know, calling her name. That's how she put it. Like, calling my name. And she said nothing was wrong. She wasn't worried or upset about anything. She said she was addicted to Chunky Monkey. So I asked her what the episode was about, or what she was watching on TV. And she said, well, it was her favorite show, Charmed. So since she was doing something that she enjoyed, there was no reason, or so she thought, that she would want to down a pint of ice cream, or maybe two. And when I asked what the episode was about, she said, oh, well, it's when a demon breaks the bond between the sisters and they start fighting and it gets really nasty and contentious. And I said, oh, sisters fighting. Huh. Hmm. And she looked at me and went, oh, my gosh, I totally see what happened. Because she had a terrible relationship with her sister. Watching Charmed activated intense feelings about their relationship. But before she was consciously aware that she was being triggered, she went to ice cream for comfort and distraction. Ice cream was not the problem. Ice cream was the solution to the problem. The problem was her inability to recognize her emotions and deal with her poor relationship with her sister, sort of, you know, cope with that. And when I taught her how to identify her feelings and how to soothe herself without food, guess what? Ice cream stopped calling her name. That is an example of our unconscious minds. It can be, you know, very complicated and complex, but that's an example. She didn't know she was triggered, but she was massively triggered. And as we get more aware and we see, well, what is it? What is the true trigger? Then we can deal with it. I like to say you cannot fight an invisible army. You just get beaten up. But when you make that army visible, you see what you're fighting, and then, you know, oh yeah, you can fight back. Boom. I have a much better right hook than that. I did take Krav Maga, but yes, I can. We can all fight our inner demons. We can all fight the ideas and the thoughts and the beliefs and that come from the past, but are haunting our present. When I talk about the past, it is not really about the past. It is about how the past is affecting the present, which is something really important, because so many people say to me, "Oh, I was in therapy for 20 years talking about the past." Well, you know, talking about what happened in the past for 20 years, while cathartic and probably necessary a little bit, doesn't ultimately help you. You have to look at how the past has affected your present. That's where change happens. And that's part of the invisible army. Okay, got questions? Want to talk to me about any of this? Please feel free to, if you're on Instagram, drop a comment. If you'd like to call me, the number is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. Let me look at, let's see, look at the questions. Nobody wants to talk to me today. Oh. Okay. Why can't I stop thinking about food? Well, this is a common one. Why can't I stop thinking about food? Often, and you know, I was talking earlier about my experience where I'd wake up and my first thought was, okay, what am I going to eat today? How am I going to be good? What am I going to not eat? What am I going to exercise? Just numbers, 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 numbers. And my last thought at night was I good? What did I eat today? How many calories? How many carbs? How many fat grams? Am I going to gain weight in the morning or lose it? How do you stop doing that? Well, one thing that's really important to do is look at what thoughts are you not thinking if you're constantly preoccupied with food, weight, body image, all of that. If I had a magic wand and I took away your thoughts about food, this person said, why can't I stop thinking about food? Well, I'm going to suggest that you're thinking about food so that you don't think about something else that is eating at you. I once had a group and we talked about, like, you know, what are the underlying issues and what are the hidden unconscious reasons someone might be focused on food or afraid of losing weight or why do you sabotage yourself, all of this stuff. And I had one person and she kept insisting, no, it's all about, it's food, I'm preoccupied, it's all this 20 pounds I have to lose, it's really, the 20 pounds is the 20 pounds, there's nothing else to it, there's no hidden anything, I'm just so upset at myself because I can't lose these 20 pounds. And she was upset at herself, she beat herself up, which of course made her eat more, because, you know, that's the cycle. You get mad at yourself for eating, and then you eat to escape yourself and to feel better, and then you get mad at yourself for doing it, and it just is this interminable cycle. Well, at the very last day of our group, she actually said that if she were not thinking about her weight, if she were not thinking about food all the time, she would want to think about leaving her husband. So it was easier for her to think about losing 20 pounds and be preoccupied by thoughts of food, weighing herself constantly, than it was to think about, oh, Josh, hold on, I'll be right there, than it was to think about what it was that was eating at her, which was her relationship with her husband. So if you cannot stop thinking about food, think about my magic wand. If I could magically take all that away from you, what would be left? What would you be worried about instead? Hi, Josh. Sorry to keep you waiting.
No, it's okay. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I wanted to talk to you about eating disorders. And I wanted to talk about how I don't want to use too much like psychoanalytic terminology, but like the superego and how it can be overly cruel. Like you were saying it's really not Josh. Food. It's actually how we Josh. Are to ourselves.
Okay. Yeah. So Josh, I'm going to make you a deal. I don't want to talk about eating disorders conceptually and the superego and all of that, which is not going to be very meaningful. I want to talk about you and your, let's call the superego the critic, the harsh, super harsh critic. So instead of talking about it generally, let's talk about it, how that relates to you. How are you?
Well, that's what I'm, I can't really talk in terms other than myself. So I am talking about myself.
Okay, so I want you to use, instead of the superego, which is very distancing clinical talk, I'm critical to myself.
Well, I don't want to say that I'm critical to myself. I'd rather say that it looks like what you're saying is it is the superego, or it is the critical voice that is causing us to eat or to restrict.
Not us, you. I am challenging you to talk about you, because here's why. When you call and you talk about it in generalities, it's a way of protecting yourself from talking about your specific situation. So it's a way of protecting yourself. Doesn't really help to talk about things generally. Let's talk about things specifically.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm honestly doing that. Because I wouldn't come on the show and not talk about myself. But I just, it's the way I prefer to speak, because it's just the way that's the way I think about myself. I think about myself in those terms.
Okay, so when you say us, you're not talking about you. So
I'm not talking, no, I am. When I say us, I am talking about me.
Okay, then say me.
But I just prefer not to use those terms.
Why do you prefer that?
It's just the way I think about things. It's the way I think about things, because I would assume that whatever's true for me would be true for someone else. So for me, it doesn't really, and I am talking very generally, not saying I did this. I'm not saying that someone else did what I did or the experiences I had were someone else's experiences. But when I'm talking generally, I would assume that what is true for me is true for someone else. So I don't have a problem using us.
But I have found that when people talk about us, they're avoiding talking about like the me. It is when we talk about, well, we feel this way or people feel this way, it is a distancing language that keeps us from feeling something, that can keep you and anyone else who does this from feeling the intensity of the feeling if they were talking about how it affected themselves. It may be that that what you're saying is going to relate to somebody else, but they don't need you to talk about it as an us. They're going to understand either way. They're going to go, oh yeah, that's me too. But when you talk about it.
I'm not doing that. I'm not trying to tell someone else anything. It's just the way that I speak.
And I am telling you, and I know this is hard, and I'm telling you that the way you are speaking is also keeping you possibly from feeling something with more intensity. It's a form of protection when we use certain language. But that's some food for thought for you to think
about. Yeah, I mean, I totally understand that. And I've done that before with you where, you know, you've told me to use I, and I have used I. It's just that for some reason I was trying to say something and it's almost like I couldn't even say it to you.
So it must be hard to say when it's personal, when it's more general, maybe it's easier to say. And that's the point, right? That it's hard to, if something's hard to say from an I place, then there's some, it's charged. When we talk generally, it's easier because we're not, it's experience distance, not experience near. But say whatever it is that you, what we're going to say.
Okay. So what I was going to say when you first picked up my call was I was going to say something along the lines of, it looks like the superego, the critical voice, is controlling our food intake or restriction. And no. I think I did say that, but I would just like to know what you thought about the content of what I said, not the way I said it. If that makes sense.
Yes, I will be. I'm happy to speak to both. So on a personal level, I want you to think about your language because that can keep you from feeling something intensely. And as for the content of what you're saying, no. The way we talk to ourselves affects the way we feel. And when we do not have a way of responding to ourselves in a nurturing, comforting, supportive way, we turn to food for comfort. So I guess, you know, if you want to sort of bypass that, yes, that being harsh to ourselves does cause people to turn to or from food or do something, you know, self-destructive with food. But it really is, there's a part missing there, which is that it's not simply the harsh voice. It's the lack of ability to express certain feelings and respond to ourselves, right? Turning to food is a way of soothing, coping, distracting, numb, all those things. When we do that with food.
Okay, so what I would say back to you is I would say that I would like to get a little bit more specific into, and if you want to give examples, that's fine, but I would like to talk about specifically, you know, and it does have to do with the way we say things. I think you brought up that point too, but exactly what's going on in the mind unconsciously that is telling us, oh no, you need to eat this or you can't eat this, or just generally if it doesn't have to do with food, because you were mentioning it doesn't really have to do with food, what is this voice that Freud called the superego say, what is this voice really doing to us specifically?
Josh, that is a question that is, there's no us. It is different for each person, and when we talk about the superego, that's a very archaic language. I prefer to talk about how have you learned to be harsh to yourself? Whose voice is it when you say you shouldn't eat that? Who's talking? That's different for everybody. When we talk to ourselves in second person, who's talking? When we talk to ourselves in a general way, you know, why? So the answer, there is no answer that is going to apply to everybody. There is no the superego. There's just each person's way of relating to himself or herself and where they learn that way of being. So I would say, right, is your critical voice a part of you that identified with your father's harshness, for example, given what you've said on previous calls? So
right. We could call, so we could I'll call, get to that. I can get to that I can get to that in a second. What I would want to say first is it's almost as if we can't recognize the difference between, say, the two voices. I know you give examples, and that example you gave was perfect, but it's almost like I want to go in deeper and talk specifically about the difference of how it sounds between those two voices.
The difference is the pronoun. When you talk to yourself from you, that is often a critical voice. When you talk to yourself as I, there's a difference between saying, you should do that, and you suck, you're disgusting, and saying, I suck, I'm disgusting, or I should do that. You know, what part of you is in control, in the driver's seat of your life, is often shown by the pronoun. And when we talk to ourselves from a you place, it is often harsh and critical and mean. When we say I, it's different. It's more of the self.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that's a very big distinction. I mean, I feel like that's the core of the work you do, is being able to separate these two voices and to sort of challenge the voice that might be causing the problem.
And to discern, where did that come from? We are in conflict with different parts of ourselves. Last week, I think it was, I talked about the little girl who was crying, and her mother came running up and said, "Don't cry, don't cry. Here's a cookie." And when I saw that, I thought, one day that little girl is going to internalize her mother's response to her crying. And when she's sad, she's going to say to herself, "Don't cry, don't cry. I need a cookie." That we internalize our relationships and reenact them. What was between you and someone else now becomes between different parts of yourself.
Right. So you're saying that that's how it develops. That's interesting. So that's the root of it. That's how that happened.
We identify with the way that we are treated, and then we treat ourselves that way. And I say we because that is something that I have found that applies to most people with eating disorders.
Okay, so it looks like we're identifying with the parent, but it could, from what I understand, and I'm not anywhere, a psychoanalyst or anything, but from what I understand of what I've read, it can be even worse than the parent. The parent is only a guide. And our critical voice could be like nothing we've ever even seen before.
There are two reasons why people develop a harsh inner critic. One is they identify with some harsh way that they are being treated and treat themselves that way. The other way people develop that kind of harsh inner critic and have harsh rules is when they don't have enough structure, when there's not enough guidance, structure, sense of safety, when they're left too much on their own, things are too kind of loosey-goosey or whatever. Kids need structure, and they create structure that is harsher than often any actual person would ever be with them. Those are the two ways that people create an inner harsh critic. And then it's impossible to have this very loud inner critic and a very loud, supportive part of you. And so often the critic runs the show, and the critic says something, tears us down, to use your language with us. We feel terrible, and then we go to food to distract, numb, comfort, whatever. So those are the two ways that people create. Those are the two ways.
And most
that people
likely, like you were saying about your history, you never talked about your eating disorder. You talked about relationships, guys, your anxieties, whatever. it must be affecting other parts of our life too.
What must be affecting our other parts of our lives?
The critic. Because like you said, you never even talked about food with your therapist. So it was affecting other parts of your life. It wasn't just affecting food. She treated the other parts of your life or whatever your analyst
was. No, it's all the same. No, Josh, it's all the same thing. Eating disorders are not about food. Eating disorders are not about food. Eating disorders are a way of using food to cope. Food is not the problem. Food is the solution to the problem. The problem is a critical voice. When we are mean to ourselves and we feel terrible and we don't know how to be nice to ourselves, we're going to turn to food or other things. And by the way, there are so many people who've had weight loss surgery, and then they start having cross addictions, or they start gaining back the weight. And that's because they never changed their internal worlds. They never looked at why they were eating. They just focused on found a way to eat less, but they don't resolve whatever it is that conflict is to when you're living with a mean a voice within, and then they just go to things.
What about this idea that the purity or impurity of the food that we're eating? In other words, maybe we're too harsh, so we don't take in pure food, or we're too harsh about the food itself, saying, "Oh, this food is impure. You shouldn't eat this." What do you think about that? Purity and impurity.
In my book, Food for Thought, not The Binge Cure, but my earlier book, Food for Thought, I talk a lot about orthorexia. Orthorexia is people take eating clean to an extreme. And it is often, consciously, they just want purity. They just want pure foods. Unconsciously, there is usually a conflict about being messy, being, sexual sometimes, being like so out of control, and dirty thoughts or whatever it is, and using, again, this is unconscious, and then using the purity of food to feel pure inside. One thing that I can tell you, a lot of times when people are getting rid of messy ideas about themselves and their lives, that are cluttering their heads, they come in and they say, "Oh, I cleaned out my garage, or I totally straightened up my closet. I got rid of so much stuff I don't need anymore." Sometimes there's really a correlation between our mental process and our physical environment. And same goes for eating clean, taken to an extreme. It is often a defense, a protection against internal messiness. So those are my thoughts on that.
That makes sense. And I guess the last thing I'll say, so I don't take too much of your time, is, or at least, what's coming to my mind now, is what about this idea that, and I, speak for myself or speak for anyone really, that when we get close to the goal in life that we're trying to do, that critic really has a heyday then, because then they say, "Oh no, you'll never get over your eating disorder." So it's kind of like what you were saying about recovery, actually, this idea of recovery and why you don't like it. It makes me think that, the critic doesn't want us to be healthy and cured. Can you say something about that too? And then I'll hang up.
Okay. Again, everybody is different. And what you're talking about, if you get close to your goal weight or start to realize, "Oh, I'm not engaging in eating disorder behaviors," or, "Oh, I'm feeling pretty good," or, "Oh, I'm going on a date," or, "Oh, I'm going to apply for a new and better job." And then boom, you're back in the old behaviors. That's called sabotaging yourself. And people sabotage themselves for different reasons. There, one common reason is a fear of happiness, because they associate happiness with loss of happiness, as if, as soon as, think about our culture, it says, "Oh, it's too good to be true," or waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then as if as soon as you feel happy, something terrible is going to happen to you. Well, as long as you don't feel happy about your weight, you're safe. If you never enter paradise, you cannot be kicked out of it. And so this is like a way of protecting ourselves. Remember, this is not logical. This is psychological. Some people are afraid that if they get to a certain place, there will be all kinds of expectations. Well, if I get to a healthy weight, then I'm going to have to do X, Y, and Z. Then I'm going to have to step it up in these certain areas of my life. Now I'm going to have to sign up on a dating app. Now I'm going to have to think about, as that woman in my group, maybe I'm not happy in my marriage. Think about things that they don't want to think about. Keeping focused on your weight keeps you from looking at things in your life that are really scary to look at. And there are, you know, other reasons why people are sabotage themselves. And what you just said, Josh, you don't deserve, like, you know, you don't deserve it. Then who's that talking? And why don't you deserve it? You have to look at what is the part of you that doesn't think you deserve to feel good, to have good things in life? What's the part of you that thinks you're supposed to suffer in some way? And to not do so is breaking some rule. So it's really
okay, looking. Great. I'll talk to you next time.
Okay. Thank you, Josh.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye-bye. So, you know, I just really want to underscore the point that it's not about what is logical and conscious. It's often, you know, not logical, it's psychological. Logically, if you know that eating 40 cookies and then, you know, and then the rest of the pizza and then the this and everything in the kitchen, logically, you know that's not healthy for you. It's not going to resolve your problems. It's just going to make you feel terrible. Logically, you know that. Psychologically, something else is going on and something else is motivating you to be unable to stop. Something is going on. And that could be any number of things. And so it could be converting emotional pain to physical pain. Maybe you're eating so much that you're in pain. It's easier to deal with physical pain than it is emotional pain. Maybe there is a void in your life that you're symbolically filling with food. Maybe you don't have enough of something in your life, but you can have more and more and more of food. What is it for you? What is out of your awareness, hidden from you, but not out of operation? And that's why being really curious about this, instead of focusing on the behavior that you're doing, be curious about the hidden why. And that's, you know, what really makes psychoanalytic thinking very different from other forms of therapy is that we look at the hidden why you're doing something you don't want to do, or you're not doing something you do want to do. There is always a reason. There is always a reason. And getting very curious about that, shining a light on that, is transformative. And in the area of eating disorders and binge eating disorder in particular, you know, remember that food represents something. Food represents people, represents relationship. We talk about comfort food. We really want to be comforted. And so people are unreliable, unavailable, unpredictable. Food is reliable, available, and predictable. It is easier to have a relationship with food and your body sometimes for some people. Again, everyone is a unique individual, and everyone has a different, slightly different reason for why they're doing what they're doing. But that's something that you want to look at. What about your relationship with people, and how does that show up with food? You can't have, you know, You can't have the availability of someone there, but you can fill up on food, which represents people and our language, fulfilling relationships, satisfying relationships, hungry for love, starving for attention, even our language really gives clues as to that complex internal dialogue and need between our needs and our relationships and how that gets played out with food. So it is complicated. It is interesting. And it is, if you look at it like, let me be a detective, I call myself a detective of the mind. Let's be a detective. Let's look at a clues for what's going on rather than go, oh, you ate that. You're never going to lose weight or all the horrible things you might say to yourself. Instead, be curious and just start by asking yourself, what's that about? Why am I eating this? What is this doing for me right now? That is a great start. And that is the show for today. So thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. You can also listen or watch later on Apple Podcasts. Just look for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you love the show, if you find it interesting, please take a moment to head over to Apple Podcasts and leave either a rating or a review or both, because the more that we show up in the more reviews and the more ratings, the more we show up in searches and the more people we help. So isn't that a great thing? Thank you for your help. Stay curious, not critical, and I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.